Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the first presidential debate in terms of whether the American people are well served by these few debates that are controlled and circumscribed by both parties, and where the role of journalists in probing questions is limited and lacking. Jay Rosen, a professor of journalism at New York University and the author of What Are Journalists For?, joins us. His award-winning blog, Think Press, offers critical analysis of journalism and the press. Then we'll go to Venezuela and get an assessment of where the candidates stand in the last days before Sunday's presidential election. Virginia Lopez, a Caracas-based journalist who covers Latin America and Venezuela for the UK Guardian, joins us to discuss the conflicting polls that give Hugo Chavez a lead between 5 and 10 points and others that give his challenger Enrique Capriles a 4-point lead. And finally, since we appear to be living in the new Gilded Age, we will look back into a fascinating character from the last Gilded Age with Janet Wallach, the author of a new book, The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age. We will discuss similarities between the current Gilded Age and the last, and comparisons between the plutocrats of today and those that the thrifty Quaker Hetty Green despised in her day. Joining us now is Jay Rosen, a professor of journalism at New York University. His award-winning blog, Press Think, at pressthink.org, puts forth critical analyses of journalism and the press. He is the author of the book, What Are Journalists For?, and numerous articles for The Nation, Columbia Journalism Review, The Chronicles of Higher Education, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Los Angeles Times. He serves as a member of the Wikipedia Advisory Board. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jay Rosen.
Thank you for having me again. You're
quoted in the Associated Press in terms of last night's presidential debate and commenting on the moderated PBS's Jim Lehrer, saying that he lost control of the time and the topics during the debate, quoting, "He didn't really ask questions. I don't know where he got the idea that saying, talk about the differences between you is a question. It's not a question. It's just an invitation to talk." So was he trying to work out this new format? I mean, why do you think he lost control?
Well, I don't know why he settled on that particular theme of what are the differences between you. It seems to me that what are the differences between them is what you want the listeners, the audience, to arrive at, not what you want the candidates to start with. Because if you start that way, it is just kind of an invitation to further stump speeches. So that seemed curious to me, but the candidates took control in the sense that they talked over the time limits. They took whatever time they wanted. They didn't really pay attention to the questions very much, and so we saw a weak moderator. Now, some people think a weak moderator is actually good because the debate is about the candidates. It's not about the moderator. And this is where we get into some of the, you know, the issues, the subtleties, the arguments that we need to have about a very important event.
So whose role do you think it is to ask the real questions, assuming that my understanding of what people are interested in is in any way correct? And that is that I think a lot of people, and particularly who don't quite know who Romney is, are probably interested in why he's refused to reveal his taxes, and interested in the remarks that were made in that surreptitious tape about the 47%. Those questions were conspicuously absent. Is it Jim Lehrer's job to bring that up, or Obama's?
Well, almost all questions were absent because we're only talking about a handful of questions that did get asked. But Jim Lehrer's approach seemed to be that he would confine the debate to the things that the candidates were ready, willing, and able to talk about, which is different than asking them to address the issues Americans care about. And one of the things he didn't do last night was try to inject issues that maybe had been slighted by one candidate or another or both, because that's just not how he saw his role. And his job, as he saw it, was to let the candidates lay out their different visions of how to fix the American economy and the role of government. And that's pretty much how he moderated it.
Again, I'm speaking with Jay Rosen, professor of journalism at New York University, and his award-winning blog is PressThink at PressThink.org. He's also the author of What Are Journalists For? Now, is this then to say that those that are disappointed, particularly the supporters of Barack Obama, are blaming the wrong guy, that we really should be blaming Obama, in a sense, for... It's essentially not taking on the other guy who clearly...
Right. I think it's absurd for disappointed supporters of Barack Obama to blame the moderator or ask him to inject things that the president failed to do. I think it's up to the president to inject into the debate what he wants to have there. And for supporters to look to the moderator for that is really a kind of a confession of having a weak candidate or a weak relationship with your candidate. So I don't think there's any way that that Lehrer is responsible for the president's performance or for Romney's performance.
Well, but there is a somewhat slavish politesse here in the press in terms of the way journalists relate to politicians, particularly on the PBS NewsHour, where the politicians invariably have these kind of love fests where they continually say, "I respectfully disagree with my learned colleague."
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, I grew up in Britain with the British journalism, where it's sort of journalism 101, where you ask a politician, "Now you said X on Thursday, and today you said Y. Were you lying on Thursday? Are you lying today?" And that was the very question that should have been asked last night, because the guy that showed up, Mitt Romney, was a different guy from the guy that's been campaigning.
That was not a part of how Jim Lehrer moderated the debate. He didn't see his role as challenging the candidates on their facts or on changes in their position. It's just not what he was there to do, the way he defined it. Now, there is, I think, within PBS especially, even more than NPR, but especially in PBS, there's... a kind of culture of deference to politicians, to certain kinds of authorized knowers or proved experts. But I don't think that that habit of deference is very visible to the people who run those programs and to Lehrer himself. They don't see it that way. We do. And I think that's part of the reason why he's moderated 12 debates, is that there is a deference there. He kind of feels it's, you give it your best shot. If he doesn't answer the question the first time or the second time, well, that's up to the viewers to know. And I think that's the style that he has developed at PBS, and that's part of the reason that he's chosen for that role.
Well, you would have thought, though, that when Romney said to him, essentially, "I'm going to get rid of your job, I'm going to cut funding for PBS, I'm going to put you out of business," you would have thought that might have got his attention.
Well, that is a revealing moment, because part of the attitude that the debate is about the candidates, it's not about the moderator, is that you are self-effacing, and that's what we saw then.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this then, Jay Rosen, really about the way that these debates are structured? They used to be in control by the League of Women Voters, and they tried to basically control it and make it more diverse and make it more, I think, user-friendly, and inject some substance and transparency in the process. And since the Debate Commission was formed by essentially lawyers for the Democratic and Republican Party, who control it all, that it's become this kind of managed piece of of rather boring theater?
I think that's basically right. I would put it in a bit of a different way. Debates, because they do represent this moment where both men or contenders step into the same physical space, which is also the same kind of psychological space, the same discourse space, because there is something genuinely powerful and real about that moment, it is like the beating heart of democracy. It's not that these debates are so great and they can be phonied up and controlled and managed, but part of the reason they have to be managed so tightly is that they are explosive. They are in some way touching the core of accountable government. And I think what's happened is that because they're so valuable to society, the parties realized they had to make them captive and give just enough of a real debate so that beating heart remains, but yes, try to manage it, try to make it as risk-free as possible while still risking something so that there can be a comeback, there can be, you know, a game changer. But it's all hedged about with a lot of controls and a lot of secrecy. And I think that's the testimony to how powerful the whole notion of two people alone on a stage arguing their vision for the country out in front of the nation really is and still is. And that's why 60 million people watch.
Well, but if you compare last night's first presidential debate to the number of debates that were had during the Republican primary, all of which were essentially organized by news outlets, and the candidates were only too happy to show up, and it seemed like the news outlet had control, and therefore the journalists and moderators seemed to have more control, and they were frankly more interesting. I mean, the candidates, some of them are off the wall, that is true, but I recall some fairly interesting exchanges. I didn't get much out of last night. I thought for all of the importance of the moment and what's at stake with the world's lone superpower, and who's going to be the head of the ship of state and the leader of the free world, it was a bit of a wash.
Yeah. Well, I think that reflects the fact that there's a politics or a political economy, if you will, to the organization of debates and the incentives that bring the Republican candidates to the arms of CNN or Fox during the primary season is very different than the forces that bring the two major party candidates together in the fall. And the institutional structure is different, and that results in a different kind of debate and a different kind of moderator.
Well, apparently somebody's talked to the president, because today on campaigning in Colorado, he went after Romney for essentially being a completely different person last night than the one that has been on the campaign trail. And I suppose to some extent, the way that Romney was able to completely reverse himself on all of his key positions and be somebody else, there was, an element of political risk in that with his own base, who he was essentially betraying. But on the other hand, they're so fired up in with hatred of Obama that they just want a winner. So they may forgive him. What's your reading on that?
My reading is that Romney has shown an extraordinary latitude in who he wants to be, where he wants to place himself, what he's willing to say, not say. It's been completely confusing and baffling in many ways what he hoped to achieve by that. But there may be a kind of logic to it, in the sense that it sort of assumes that there's no final court of appeal for who you are. There's no way to force a candidate to acknowledge a contradiction. There's no There are no discourse cops. There's no penalty. And I think that's the part of the election cycle in 2012 that has stumped a lot of people. And I think it's going to be one of the things that interpreters look at when the 2012 race is over is what is that style of campaigning where you don't really care if you contradict yourself. You don't really care if what you said Thursday makes no coherent sense with what you said Tuesday, and that there are certain advantages to it. And I think we saw that in the debate itself. Romney was sort of almost, in a sense, was able to claim everything. He liked all the good things about Obama's programs, and he could basically fictionalize the bad things. And being all over the place like that kind of worked for him in some crazy way. So I don't think we understand this part of the campaign very well. We just have some really crude names for it, like the post-truth politics of 2012, which isn't very satisfying.
Well, it seems fair. I mean, a lot of pundits that I've spoken to over the months have you know, the conventional wisdom is that politicians on the left move to the left in the primaries and move back to the center for the general, and the opposite's true on the right. And that's a tradition in American politics. And many people have been saying for a long time, how come Romney's still hugging the right all the way up to the last month? But last night he suddenly turned around and did a bait and switch and appealed to the center, knowing that he had a huge audience. So it seemed all of it seemed pretty tactical to me. I think he caught Obama by surprise. That's why Obama's out on the stump today. I mean, he did have a fairly lame response. Had he had the response that is journalism 101, you know, you said one thing one day and the next thing another day. Are you lying today or lying the other day? I mean, that at least would have pleased me. But the long and the short of it is, do you expect Jay Rosen, that the next debates are going to be a little more or a little less boring?
I don't really know. I try not to anticipate too much. When I really care about the event, and I certainly do in the case of the debates, I kind of try to approach them with, like, a more open attitude, like anything that happens sort of thing, even though that, it too, is in some ways naive. But I think these questions of whether campaigns are accountable for what they say is, in fact, a question. And I think that the Romney campaign is operating under a different premise than the Obama campaign about that.
Well, you mean they're 18th century people?
Well,
they believe in the age of
a lot of different ways to phrase that. That's
right.
Right.
They believe in the age of enlightenment, that the truth somehow sets you free. I thank you for joining us, Jay Rosen.
Thank you for having me again.
Again, I've been speaking with Jay Rosen. He's a professor of journalism at New York University. His award-winning blog, Press Think, at pressthink.org, puts forward critical analyses of journalism and the press. He's the author of the book, What Are Journalists For?, and numerous articles for The Nation, Columbia Journalism Review, The Chronicle of Higher Education, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Los Angeles Times. And he also serves as a member of the Wikipedia Advisory Board. We're going to take a brief station break, and then we'll come back and go to Venezuela to get an update on the presidential elections.